Some of you may not know me. My name is Golo, and I'm looking since last 14 years after Baba's solar installations. And today I'm going to give you a short overview on our activities in the area of renewable energy. But I also first introduce you to the subject of global warming. You all know that, I hope you all understand English also. Good? Yeah, it's okay. We'll be a little bit technical. You all know the subject of global warming is very famous. There's hardly any day in the newspapers we don't have an article on global warming. And every week there's a conference around the world where our scientists and our politicians, they meet and they discuss about global warming and how to combat it. So first of all, I give a little bit of an introduction. What is actually behind the phenomenon of global warming, what it actually means. And in May, there was a report by the IPCC, that is the Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change. That's the organization of the United Nations which deals with global warming, and 2,000 scientists all over the world have gathered for 10 years all the data, and they have published a report, and they say we have 8 years time to reduce our greenhouse emissions. Greenhouse emissions are usually carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, methane and other gases which go into the atmosphere and which increase the temperature on the globe. That's why they're called greenhouse gases. And all countries of this world have to act together, to cooperate and act together. Otherwise, we have very drastic consequences. Now, first of all, a little bit of an introduction. Who is actually creating these greenhouse gases? And you can see that 25% is by industry. It's by power generation. So it means all our power stations, they contribute with 25% to the greenhouse gases. And emissions by the industry is about 19%. 19% of the worldwide industry, they contribute to the greenhouse gases. Here you can see traffic. And when I came first to India, there was in our institution one bus, one truck and one jeep. That was 1985. I came first time to Madhuban. And in Mount Abu, there was no traffic. And between the road, Abu Road and Mount Abu, there was twice a day a government bus. And at Brahma Baba's days, you came up by bus and took a bullock cart to Pandav Bhavan with your luggage. Nowadays, you know how many vehicles we have in Yagya. We have maybe some 50 buses. I think we have totally 300 vehicles inside the institution at the moment. So you can see traffic is a very big problem worldwide. And now in India, all the big cities, they are jammed with traffic jam. Very difficult to travel actually around in India nowadays. Then we have emissions by agriculture. And agriculture is actually quite a big problem, especially all the cows which we are keeping worldwide, because many people eat meat. So these cows also contribute 13% to the greenhouse gases. So it's a very big contributor, and it's good for us because we are vegetarians. So it's a good point. We can say we save the planet. Yeah, you can see here a difference also in traveling. If I'm using a train, I emit 15 kilo of CO2. For Paris to Marseille, 400 kilometers. If I use flight, already 187 kilograms. And if I use a car and drive myself, 380 kilograms. So you can already see that car is very bad and train is very good. Best is walking or bicycle. But so when you're back at your home place, you can take your bicycle. It's a good thing. And worldwide emission by housing means heating and all these kind of things. Can you reduce the sound a little bit? Can you reduce sound a little bit? It's echo. When we reduce the when we reduce, here we can see that by housing, it's about 8% greenhouse emissions. So this is all how these gases are actually produced. And you already can see, actually, we have to change completely our lifestyle. If we don't change our lifestyle, we will be in soup. Here you can see the biggest culprits, the biggest CO2 producers is the USA, is number one. But this is from 2003, and China is this year overtaking USA in terms of CO2 emissions. And you can see here's the EU, European Union, Russia, Japan, India, Germany, Great Britain, Canada, South Korea and Italy. So it's actually a handful of countries which are emitting those gases. It's not Africa and it's not South America, it's not Australia. It's these countries which are the main culprits and the main forces behind the problems which we are facing. So actually only these countries, they would have to work together and we could solve the problem. Now you can see here in the global warming, the scientists, they have three different scenarios. They say the first scenario is we reduce the temperature up to 2 degrees. Here you can see the degrees, the temperatures, and here you can see the time factor. So they say we should be able to reduce the temperature increase by 2 degrees only. If we keep it in the blue, we can manage. Means we get some flooding, we get some more hurricanes, we get this problem and that problem, but humanity will be able to survive. We will be able to produce enough food and most of the people can live where they are. If the climate changes, if the climate, the temperature raises by 4 degrees, this is the green one, we will be in soup. We will be not able to handle the climate changes. Many people will lose their households, many people will lose the area where they live. And if the climate increases, the temperature increases by 6%, it will be the total disaster. We will face so many problems, humanity will have difficulties to survive. So our scientists in Bali, there was the big conference and they were all discussing to keep the temperature within 2 degrees of raise. Because the data which they were using at the Bali conference, you may have heard in Bali was recently the big conference in which they tried to agree on the follow-up treaties of the Kyoto Protocol, because the Kyoto Protocol, which is handling the greenhouse gas emissions, is ending at 2012. So in Bali, all the countries of the world, they meet and they discussed a follow-up treaty, how to handle the situation after 2012 when Kyoto Protocol is ending. But America was blocking the conference and actually in the last moment they agreed, but the compromise which they found is a very weak one. It will actually not help us really. And at Bali conference they were all talking on 2 degrees. But now you see the actual data. This data is recent data of this year. And you can see this was from the United Kingdom Meteorological Department. And you can see that this orange is the mean temperature, means average temperature from 71 to 2000. It was 6.5 degrees. Already we have 10 degrees. Now in 2007. 2007 was the second hottest year on record. And you can see that all the different places, we can see that the temperatures have already gone up 1.5 degrees in average up to now. So we can see that the temperature raise is very, very dramatic. And the effects, what will happen, I will show you. And you can see here, this is the number of storms. So 1987, we had 7 big storms. This is 2005. We had 27 major storms. And 2007, we're already here in 2007. So the number of storms is connected to the temperature. Because the higher the temperature raises, the more energy is in the atmosphere to create storms. And they become more violent. And you can see here one of the major storms which everybody knows, I hope. This was Hurricane Katrina and this is New Orleans. And this is New Orleans after the Hurricane Katrina. And New Orleans was the first mega city in the world which got destroyed. But most likely it will be not the last mega city which will be destroyed. Huh? So here you can see the city was totally destroyed, and actually the scientists say don't rebuild it, because this kind of hurricanes, they can come again and again. Here is New Orleans. This is Katrina. This is the Caribbean Ocean. And they say this city is doomed because the ground is sinking and the islands which are here and they were protecting the city are completely washed away. And the number of these big storms is increasing, as you could see. So the scientists say don't rebuild it. But they couldn't do that out of political reasons, and they have rebuilt the city. Here you can see a picture out of 2007. This was Africa. 20 countries in Africa got flooded straight away. It was the worst flooding in history. And many people lost their land. A lot of good soil has been washed into the oceans. And many, many people got displaced. And the food production has reduced by 50% in those countries. So you can see already very serious effect of global warming. Here you can see the Kilimanjaro, that is the biggest, highest peak in Africa. In 1990, it is covered with snow. Now you can see in 2006, that's left over. So there are now some travel agencies which arrange travel tours to the Kilimanjaro, and they say just go and watch as long as the ice is on top of it. Here you can see also another effect is we get big, big forest fires. Actually, this year we had horrible forest fires in Greece, in California, you might have heard it. Very, very disastrous forest fires. The reason is we have less rainfalls and the forests are more vulnerable to those forest fires. And the problem is after these fires, they are not regrowing. The reason is we have a reduction of rainfalls all over the world in certain areas. And the soil dries up, the fire is there, nothing regrows. We are losing very, very important forests, and these forests are the lungs of the planet. You can see here also the ice is melting at a rapid speed. This is in the Alps. You can see in Switzerland, 1990, this is called Trift Glacier. You can see very long, nicely. You can see in 2001, that's the end of the glacier. Maybe it's gone already, it's 2007. Maybe it's no more there. Maybe it's only existing on postcards now. So you can see there's no more ice. Some people say that is not a big problem because that is in the mountains, but 70% of the water which runs in the Ganges and which feeds water to the plains where all the rice cultivation is going on and all the food is produced, 70% of that water comes from those glaciers in the Himalayas. If these glaciers melt in the summer, the Ganges will reduce 70% of its volume. There will be no water. And North India, along the Ganges, that is the corn chamber of India. So imagine what it means for the food production of the world. Because it's not only in India a big problem if the glaciers goes, it's in South America, everywhere. Those glaciers, they balance the water flow for the rivers. If they go, worldwide we have very, very big problems with our water. Here you can see now the famous Arctic North Pole. And you can see here, this was 2007, this is the ice shield in winter. And you can see it was already reduced. This looks small on this slide, but it's huge areas. And for the first time in history, the ships could travel along here. It's called the Northwest Passage. After that happened, the stocks of the shipping companies, they went up. But of course, the stocks of the ice bears went down because they lose their livelihood, because they need the ice. And there's a prediction of the National Snow and Ice Center in Colorado, that's the U.S. agency which monitors worldwide the ice. And they say by 2007, by 2020, maybe no more ice in the Arctic. This was published in 1st May 2007. 2 weeks ago, there was a press article by a NASA scientist, and he said, in 5 years, there is no more ice. Well, this is not a big problem. If this ice is melting, the water level may rise by 50 centimeters. We can manage that. We build a little bit higher walls and the dams we increase a little bit. And when the flooding comes, we go to the higher land. But the big question is, what is the ice doing on Iceland? Because here is the biggest amount of sweetwater ice in the world. On Iceland, we have 3 kilometers thick ice. Oh, that was the rock over it. So here you can see that melting of the ice in the Arctic since 1979, 2005, it has already reduced much more. This is Iceland. And here the ice is 3 kilometers thick. So far, our scientists, they told us, don't worry, it'll take 100 years for that ice to melt. Well, that was until last year. Until they went there and started drilling into the ice, and they found out it is melting at an incredible rate. Actually, in summer, there are huge rivers now on this ice, and these rivers are huge rivers flowing at a high speed, and suddenly they disappear in the ice. There are big holes. It becomes like Swiss cheese. It becomes hollow inside. And now the scientists are no more sure that it will take 100 years. Some scientists say big pieces may break off, they will create tsunamis. And they say this may melt in a couple of years and it will be gone. If this is happening, we are facing really disaster. Now, Baba said in the Muli, anytime anything can happen. So this could be something which can happen anytime, that a big piece breaks off and a big tsunami goes around the globe. And you can see here nowadays they are monitoring with satellites the exact seawater level in millimeters. But maybe millimeters is not enough in a short time. They may have to change to meters. Because if the Arctic melts and Iceland melts, we're talking of 6 meters rise of water level in the globe, worldwide, 6 meters. Who's living in a coastal city? Okay. So Sydney, New York, Rotterdam, London, Canberra, Canberra's inland, Bombay, Calcutta, Madras, all those cities, they will go. We cannot support a sea city with a harbor when the sea level rises by 6 meters. It is impossible to keep such a city functioning. It will be flooded all the time. You can see here a projection of what will happen if the seawater level rises by 5 meters. I think Google also has now, Google Maps has a function, and you can click raise the sea level by 1 meter, raise the sea level by 5 meters, and you can see what happens to the land. And here you can see, this is Miami. Miami will be gone, Orlando, New Orleans, Jacksonville, New York. This is here Miami, this is one part, but see here, this is Bangkok will be gone, Rangoon, Ho Chi Minh City, many, many areas, they will be flooded. Many islands will disappear, and most of the big harbor cities, they will also disappear. And this is something which is not, I'm not talking now science fiction. It's something which is slowly, slowly filtering through the scientific community. And slowly you will find an article in that magazine and an article in that magazine. And when you click on the webpage of that institute which has done all these calculations, you will see it's already written there. But our politicians, they are discussing data which is 2 years old. So imagine the current status is actually much more serious than what we thought. Okay, again, the climate change also gives us a scarcity of rainfalls. Already all these areas which are marked very dry, dry, semi-arid and dry and humid, all these areas here, they will face drastic and dramatic change in rainfalls. Most likely they will face a reduction in rainfalls drastically. sometimes 50% reduction, sometimes 30%, sometimes 70%. It cannot be predicted 100%, but we know already the climate will change dramatically. And all these people which live here, many of them, they will lose their livelihood because they cannot grow anything anymore because the land will become desert. So this is a picture from the river Elbe in Dresden, Germany, and this is in May 2007. Usually in May we have the month in Germany. I'm from Germany. Despite I'm 9 months of the year in India, I'm always looking up the news in Germany thanks to the internet. And this is actually the month where we have most of the rainfalls in the year. And all the rivers, they are overflowing because all the water in the mountain, all the snow in the mountains melts. In 2007, we had zero rainfall in the month of May. It never happened before, zero rainfall. Plus, all these ships, they were grounded because the river was down. This never ever happened before at any time. Very, very, very scary, very unusual. In Australia, we had the worst drought in 1,000 years. The Prime Minister Howard at that time, who was also one gentleman who was against the climate Kyoto Protocol, he and George Bush are good friends, he said, we have to pray to God now because we can't do anything anymore. In Australia, the food prices have gone up 50% due to the drought. It's a very serious situation because many, many farmers in the outbacks, they had to close their farms. They had to sold their cattle and their sheep, and very serious situation, very, very serious. And 2 weeks ago it rained, and Melbourne got the worst rain in 50 years. So you can imagine how dramatic the climate actually is changing. And it is affecting all of us. You all see that this year and last year the food prices have gone up, no? Did you recognize? Food prices have gone up? So this is due to this fact. It's not yet publicly known, but in many, many areas food production is under severe stress. Yes, we have rapid desertification. All over the world, the deserts are growing at a rapid speed. Rapid. And once the land is lost, no chance to recover it. So, the conclusion. We are already in the midst of a dramatic climate shift. This is very, very clear, and there's no question about it. The climate change is human-made. That is also very clear, despite George W. Bush is still saying it may be some alien influence from the Mars or something, what else? It is human-made, it is us. Since 150 years we have the Industrial Revolution and we are producing CO2 emissions, and since 100 years temperatures going up. And we have to act now. Actually, it's already too late, but okay, we should act now. Some scientists, they say, see, the problem is even if we stop our emissions right away now, for the next 30 years the temperature will grow. Because the climate is a very slow mechanism. Our oceans are very big, the atmosphere is very big, so even if we stop our CO2 emissions immediately, the effect will be after 20 to 30 years. So the next 20 to 30 years we will still face increased temperature levels and all that kind of stuff. So it's very, very serious situation. Actually, we should have acted 15, 20 years ago. At that time the problem was also already known, but at those times those people who were warning, they were called crazy idealists and nobody was listening. So the poorest countries suffer the most. Africa will suffer, Asia will suffer a lot. The least suffering is northern part of Europe, and also America is also reasonable well. The rich countries have to lead. You have seen in the other information that actually the rich countries are the main producers, the developed countries are the main producers of the global warming. And so the rich countries have produced the CO2 gases in the atmosphere, and we are actually bound also to give the money to the poor countries to do something against it. For example, India is at the moment planning to install 40 thermal power plants based on coal this year. China wants to put up another 50 plants based all on coal. Coal will all increase CO2. So they say at Bali conference, India and China, they said, come on, you rich countries, you give us the money. Then we will put up solar plants, which cost more money, and we will slowly change. If you don't give money to us, we also want to develop our industries. So that was the big problem in Bali conference, that the rich countries, they don't want to give the money. They're sitting on their money and they say, we are rich and we are developed, and you poor countries, you should stop now and you should not develop any further. So that was the big conflict, and actually the developing countries were right. But as usually, if you get very rich, you forget to share with others. So that's what happened at the Bali conference, and that's why they could not conclude really on a solution. Yeah, recommendations. We have to carry out an energy audit in all areas. Energy audit is an engineer comes, or a specialist, and he calculates how much energy I'm using, how much I'm producing, where do I can save energy, and he will look into all those processes and he will make an analysis, and then he will give a paper and he will say, okay, if we change here, we can save 20% here, 15% here, 10% here. Many companies are doing this, many cities are doing that, many organizations are doing an energy audit. We also try to introduce this in the Brahma Kumaris Institution, and takes a little bit time here, but we're already working on some energy saving devices like LED lamps, which we are going to introduce next year. We have started our own production. Yeah, we have to do this energy audit in the area of power generation, transportation, industry and housing. Then we need an action plan. This is an action plan for Bali, but of course Bali was not successful, but we still can read it. Introduce action plan with clear targets and time frames. Because usually in Bali it was very, we may do something maybe after 10 years, and then we sit again and we form a committee, and that committee will delegate another subcommittee, and this subcommittee will find some scientists and they will make a project and they will make a proposal, and everything will take 10 to 20 years. That's what happened in Bali. So we need very clear targets and time frames. Introduce an energy tax. For example, everybody who produces CO2, he has to pay a tax on CO2. So immediately you will see people will drive less cars, people will use less energy because there will be a tax on energy. And it has to be. Our kerosene and petrol is much too cheap. We're very stupid that we burn it in cars. It's a very, very valuable raw material for the industry. Our colors, our paints, our cloth, in a lot of things we use oil. We should not burn it. It's a big mistake. So we have to actually increase the prices of these things and through market mechanism try to change. Then encourage maximum energy saving, reduce T&D. T&D is transmission and distribution losses. In India, this is T&D is in India the word for theft. In India, you might have seen these power lines, and somebody goes there and puts some cables. You know, sometimes you see so many cables hanging in India, and you think, why so many cables are hanging in India from those masts, from those electrical masts? The reason is people go there and just connect and they don't have a meter. It's called theft, but in India they call it transmission and distribution losses. They're up to 35%, sometimes 50% of the electricity is lost. So the utilities are not getting enough money, they cannot invest in new power plants, so it's a vicious cycle. So many things can be changed and many things can be done. We have to change the laws, energy conservation, building codes, so many things can be done. In Germany we have a law, if you produce electricity by solar energy, the government is bound to buy it from you at a very, very good rate. 10 times more than what electricity costs on the market. So many farmers, they put up solar plates now and they sell it to the government and they live from that. This is how Germany, which has not very good sunshine, became the biggest user of solar photovoltaic in the world. Germany absorbs every year 50% of the worldwide production of solar photovoltaic plates because of that law. Now Spain has followed, and the moment such a law is there, it's called feed-in law, the renewable energy is picking up at a dramatic speed. So it's only a question to fine-tune the laws a little bit, and things are happening. In India, we're lobbying for many years to get up such a law, but so far nothing, unfortunately, has happened. And it's a little bit drama in India. Things take their time sometimes. So we have to increase research and demonstration. At the moment, most of our money goes into military research and demonstration, how to most efficiently kill each other. And unfortunately, I think 100 times or 1,000 times more than into solar research and demonstration. We have done here 15 research projects, and believe me, sometimes it takes many years to get the funds from the government. If you develop a new machine gun or a new missile, I'm sure you get much faster those funds, you know, because so many enemies around us, no? Yeah, unfortunately. So we switched to renewable energy sources. It's not a big deal. I will show a little bit what we are doing here in the institution. We are using quite a lot of energy. Introduce decentralized local solutions, strengthen the local sector. Now, the big question is actually enough sunshine there? Because some people say, oh, see, solar energy very costly and not enough sunshine and so on. See here, this is all the gas which we have worldwide stock. This is all the oil which we have worldwide stock. And this is all the coal which we have worldwide stock. And this is uranium. This is what we need every year. This is our energy consumption. And this big wala, this big one here, this is the yearly solar radiation on Earth. So the yearly solar radiation is 1,000 times more what we need on the whole globe as energy, 1,000 times more, and is still much, much more than all the stocks of the fossil fuels. And as we already have seen from the graphs, we cannot use them any longer because they create CO2. We have to abandon those coal, oil and gas. We cannot use them, we cannot fire them up. Otherwise we doom ourselves on record speed. Many people say, oh, there's uranium, but now they have planned 200 nuclear power plants, but you know, nuclear power is very, very dangerous, and the price of uranium already gone up 20 times. So uranium is also not a solution. Atomic power is definitely not a solution. There's not enough uranium there. It's already became very costly, and these plants are really dangerous. We had a couple of accidents in Germany a couple of months ago, and nobody could believe that such kind of accidents can happen in Germany, because they all say, oh, the German power plants are very good, they're very good engineering. But human mistake was there, and we almost had a very big disaster. So you can see we have, this is our worldwide consumption, and this is the yearly solar radiation coming to the world from the sun. This is the energy coming, and this is what we need. And this is our stocks. So you see, solar power is there enough. Now a very interesting graph. Many people see it's, these graphs are actually connected. Here you have this bad graph, which we see nowadays so many times in the newspapers. These are actually the prices of gas, electricity and power. So this red one is the power, is electricity, and the blue one is the gas price. And gas and oil are connected. And you can see they are going steeply up. Nowadays, no graph is going down in our advantage. All graphs are going steeply up. And the reason for that is that actually here you can see oil. And already we have reached peak extraction. That means if you look at the worldwide production of oil, since the last 3 to 4 years, they were not able to increase the production of oil. Some people say, oh, it was because of the Americans, they had to go to Iraq. And so the Americans had to go there and bring law and order. And by bringing law and order, unfortunately, some pipelines, they got blown up, and that's why we could not increase our oil production. But science tells us that we have reached peak production. It means the world, we are pumping the maximum we can do. And those oil fields which are easy to pump and easy to extract, they are finished. Now oil is only difficult oil fields, under the ocean, under the ice, very deep drilling, very costly. Future oil is very costly and not easy, and we have reached peak oil already. Gas 15 years, uranium 20 years, coal 40 years. So actually at the moment, we are burning up the planet, we are destroying the atmosphere, and we are misusing that little bit of oil, gas, uranium and coal at a rapid speed. We're having a very stupid, very simple, very inefficient technology, and we're doing technically seen something which is very bad. A deity from Golden Age, if he would have a periscope and could look into the Iron Age and see how we use energy and all that, he would say, my God, are they stupid. But you know, as it is. So that's why the prices are going up, and they will go up further. What we will see the next years is a dramatic hike in prices of energy. It may be flights, it may be car traveling, it may be train journeys, it may be heating, it may be air conditioning. Whatever you think about it, it will become more costly. It will become more costly, and after some time it may be also not available, because we will face power shortages. Also in those countries which have not seen that before. Last year we had in Germany a big power cut. Unbelievable. Yeah, now here the solar resource. You see those countries here. Here we have very, very fantastic solar radiation. I mean fantastic solar radiation. You can see Germany, unfortunately, is not there, despite Germany does most of the research and has a lot of solar insulation, but we are not good. But India, which unfortunately does not much, has a very good solar radiation, and we are here. Here's Mount Abu. So we are blessed with sunshine, and that's why we have done quite a lot of work here. And we have different technologies. This is tomorrow's energy production. Photovoltaic, biomass, water power, geothermal. You take the heat from the ocean. Solar thermi means hot water, temperature of the water, wind power, and the power of the sun and the moon, which is called tidal power. All these energies are there, and there are many calculations that very easily we can actually shift to those technologies. All these technologies are available. You know, some people say, these technologies are not really proven, and they're not working really. You see, this gentleman is Leonardo da Vinci. He was living a long time ago, and he developed a concentrator. In this concentrator, you actually take the sunlight and you concentrate it on a point. And 1820, somebody built this. And it was working. It was actually producing steam and running a small steam engine. And 1805, this British gentleman, he built these big mirrors, focusing here, generating steam. And for 10 years, he was driving a pump. It was 300 gallons of water per minute. He was pumping for 20 years with this solar technology. And that's old stuff. So we actually have to look back to ancient technology. And you see, this is a prediction for the future. You know, all these scientists, they always make predictions. And they produce a lot of paper, and they have all these graphs. So here you can see the orange one is solar energy. So from 2020 onwards, the solar energy will grow more and more and more, until and unless, as Baba has told us, suddenly something may happen and this timeline may end somewhere, and Golden Age will come. And coal will reduce. Okay, so now we are coming to the technologies which are available actually. Everybody understands what I'm talking about? Not too complicated? Okay, good. So you can see here, this is the current development in concentrating solar power plants. If you go on big systems, you have to actually work on concentrating solar power plants. 2 weeks ago I was here, and I was here in Spain with one brother together. We made a flying visit to Spain to see some prototypes. This is in California. 350 megawatt. This is a new research project in Spain. This is a new solar tower. You have a receiver and all mirrors, and they're focusing on this tower. Inside is hot water, starts boiling, and you drive a turbine. This is in Nevada in USA, 1.6 megawatt. And in Spain, they're building 2 times 50 megawatt in Guadix. These are so-called concentrating. You have a mirror, you concentrate the sunlight. At the place where the sun concentrates, you have a pipeline. Inside that pipeline is oil or water. The water starts boiling and you run a turbine. That's how they produce solar energy. These plants are 20 years old. They were built when Jimmy Carter was president and Clinton, because they gave some subsidy. Under George W. Bush, that subsidy got cancelled because George W. Bush has friends in the oil industry and they told him it's not so good to have too many solar systems. So we had all the 20 years only this 350 megawatt. Nothing happened in solar concentrating technology, because by political will and industrial will, development of this technology got stopped. It was done purposely. So we can say also global warming, what we see now, is purposely done. It's a bad news, but it's greed. Baba tells us about greed and all these bad things. So here you can see two solar power fields. One is in USA, and this is in Germany. This is 12 megawatt on photovoltaic. Germany does not have enough sunshine to work on concentrating systems. We have to work on solar photovoltaic, which is a different technology, which is a little bit more costly than this. If you go really on power generation, you have to go on these systems with a concentrator. If you have a small house, you can go on photovoltaic. For small systems, this is good. If you go backside of Spark, you will see we have a 50 kilowatt system there. Yeah, now I come to the Brahma Kumaris and welcome you to the solar world of the Brahma Kumaris. Renewable energy for sustainable development. Our solar steam cooking system in Shantivan, all the food which is cooked here is basically cooked by solar energy. Brahma Kumaris is the biggest user of renewable energy in Asia. You may not know this, it is a big point. It's Baba. When I came 24 years ago, I had absolutely no idea what will happen to me. If I would have known it, I may would have run away, but now it's too late. So we are doing a lot of research. Actually, we are like a research organization in photovoltaic and in solar concentrating systems. And we do research in photovoltaic, solar steam cooking, water recycling, hot water, solar passive architecture, solar thermal power, and energy efficiency. I will explain to you in detail. Here's a special picture you may recognize. We're sitting right away in this hall at the moment. This is Gyan Sarovar. So here you can see our solar cooking system. We generate steam and we send it to the kitchen. And your food, rice, lentil, dal, and all this is cooked by solar energy. We cannot fry, but we can cook. Here's our photovoltaic system. Here we generate electricity. We have in Gyan Sarovar a 50 kilowatt system. We have in Shantivan a 50 kilowatt system. And we have in Madhuban a 50 kilowatt system. This is worth €1 million, or a million US dollars. This is worth, so you can imagine, this is worth 500,000 US dollars. So you can imagine what kind of efforts and money and manpower has gone in, because we didn't actually pay for it. It's all through research money, research projects, government funds, World Bank, soft loans, and all this kind of genius financial arrangements. So the Yagya does not have to pay too much money, because we are always a little bit tight financially. So. And here you can see the hot water system, and here also. So we have actually three systems. One is solar cooking, one is photovoltaic for power generation, and one is solar hot water. And that's a big thing, because nobody else in India has that. So many systems in one place. And that's how all started in 1993. This is Gyan Sarovar at that time. This is the solar house. Myself and Brother David, we live backside in this little hidden house. Don't go there, it's a secret place. And it was built in mud bricks, solar passive architecture, integrated solar, first hybrid system in India. And it was very barren, and now it looks like this. So you can see the change, and you can see solar photovoltaic and wind energy. We use a little bit of wind energy, but it's very complicated, it's not so easy. So you can see how we transformed the place, and through starting of that house, actually all this solar research project, they started in 93. We got some German scientists, some money from Germany, then later some money from India, some money from Australia. So slowly, slowly, we did so many projects. This is in 95, this is the rooftop of the kitchen. Here is Raj Rishi Bhavan. So this is a rooftop of Gyan Sarovar kitchen, which is now looking very nicely. And we installed the first solar cooker. This was a research project sponsored by the German government with $4,000 or something. We were very cheap actually at that day, that time. So you can see here, the sun rays are coming. The sun rays are coming here, falling on this dish and are reflected. Here is a second small reflector, and here's the cooking pot. And we're cooking sweet rice for 80 people. And it was very, very successful. That's how it looks nowadays. This is the solar cooking system which we have set up. 24 dishes, modular design, 12 heat exchangers, backup system, 2,000 meals per day. It was a research and demonstration sponsored by the German government. The system was installed in 97. We just had 10 years anniversary, which is also a record. You can see here the system, another view, and we maintain it. One brother is, you can go, this is the kitchen roof of Gyan Sarovar. One brother is all the time, he can show to you, and he's doing nothing else than looking around, greasing, oiling, adjusting, and seeing the thing runs nicely. So we have a very nice team. Yeah, then in 99, after this project, I was very tired. Because I came from Germany, and I was a very straight person, and a yes was a yes and a no was a no. And when I came to India, a no was a yes and a yes was a no. And this means yes in Germany, in India this means no, not a, it means all was opposite or not so easy to understand. I had a culture shock, and I was in serious depression, and I thought I should finish after this project. It took 1 year. And I had huge phone bills to Germany, and I was in a happy stage. I don't elaborate further on that. So in 1999, Brother Ramesh came to me and said, "Golo, why you don't put a solar cooker in Shantivan?" I said, "That's not possible because it's too big, and we cannot do." And then Brother from Australia came, Robin, and said, "Golo, I heard you make a solar cooker. I can put some money for that." So after 3 days, I surrendered, and I thought, okay, let's do something. And we called it the Monster. You can see here, Shantivan complex, here's the solar cooker. It's 30 tons of steel, 50 laborers, 1 year working, and it's running since then, and we cook 38,000 meals there. Here you can see our photovoltaic. Here's photovoltaic. And here we have a small shop where we sell solar gadgets to everybody, like a lantern and all this. I'm showing a little later. I have to speed up. Here you can see the solar cooker. You have a lower dish. You have an upper dish. They are concentrating the sunlight on this receiver. Inside we have water. The water boils, and voila, we have steam. Sounds very simple. Is also simple, but practically to build it is rather complicated. Here you can see the receiver. In the dishes are focusing on the receiver. Inside is water. The water starts boiling, and the boiling water wants to go up, and we collect the steam here. Here we have temperatures up to 900 degrees. It's very, very hot. Don't go there. Here you can see the insulation, the fabrication in our workshop. We started mass fabrication and all these things, and luckily the first solar steam is coming. And when the first steam came, a government officer came from the Indian government and said, "Oh, it is really working. I said, of course it is working. And then they gave us 10% subsidy after the project was finished. The good thing is now in India, if you build such a solar system, you get 50% subsidy from the government. And now more than 1,000 dishes have been built. So this is a real success story. And now many industries, they're coming. One brother, he's manufacturing those dishes. Many industries are coming and they're asking for such systems because they can feel the energy prices already. And they want to get away from fossil fuels. Yeah, this is our kitchen in full swing. Here's the steam line coming. Here are the cooking pots and we inject the steam into those cooking vessels. Here is frying going on. Frying we cannot support. Impossible. And we cook for all those people. So you can imagine that we have a great responsibility because in India the food is very important and regular availability of the food is very important. So if we fail giving the steam, we are in soup, literally, then we run away and hide. Because then the kitchen crew is very angry. So we have to give 24 hours steam on demand. That's why we have backup systems. If it is cloudy or rainy season, we switch on the backup. So 24 hours we deliver steam. But we try to give 80% by sun. Yeah, here's our water boiling system. So all the water you drink, the hot water you get, is boiled by sun. We, of course, we have to clean the dishes time to time. Here you can see our semi-automatic cleaning system. And we have a dust collection here, but it's not so bad. It's reasonable. You can see the meals cooked, 30,000 meals. Very important, diesel savings and CO2 reduction. These are the figures, and our systems are registered under CDM, under carbon, under Clean Development Mechanism, that's Kyoto Protocol. So we got a little bit of money because we are reducing every day until 1.2 tons of CO2 only in Shantivan Kuka. So we are getting some money through the Kyoto Protocol to us. Not much, maybe some 2% or 1% of the investment. It's not much, but okay. Something is better than nothing, as we say. Here's the solar cooker in New Delhi. You know the Om Shanti retreat. Who has not been to Om Shanti retreat center? Oh, quite a lot. You should go there once. It's a very, very nice place. And we have also a solar cooker there. And here you can see it's 28 dishes. And meanwhile, we increased the dish to 2.5 square meter. We started with 7.2. This is our system at the Global Hospital. Have you seen? Backside of Global Hospital, there's a solar cooker. You not know? You go to the shop and backside the shop a little bit further and you will see this system. And we supply steam to the laundry, to the canteen, and to the kitchen, and for sterilization. And here we have increased the dish to 12 square meter. So here 12 square meter, 1,000 kilo steam per day for sterilization, laundry, and canteen. This is one of our latest systems. This is our solar system in Pandav Bhavan, in headquarter, right in front of the terrace where everybody drinks the chai. So I got many complaints that I spoiled the view. So I told them, you must see this as an object of art. You can see here. It's very artistic. You don't get easy such shapes. So okay, now they're happy. And we produce all the steam for Pandav Bhavan. Unfortunately, we have space problem. Only we could put 6 dishes, but it's a quite powerful system and mostly we can manage. Here you can see our high-tech crane in full action. I don't have to explain too much, but you can see the genius and rather, I mean, it's high-tech. And as usual, 2 people in action and the rest is looking. So we have done some meditation now with this picture. And you all must become the 2 people who are in action in your spiritual efforts. Don't become the lazy ones which are standing and watching. Become the active ones. Okay, so you can see here it's quite some fun, you know, erection of this tank, for example. So we have no cranes, we have to do all by hand, which is interesting because you can do wonders if you know how to do it. Yeah, this is the latest picture. This is our 16 square meter dish, which is double the size what we started. And this was a research and demonstration sponsored by the Indian Ministry of Non-Conventional Energy Sources. India is the only country in the world which has a solar ministry and a solar minister. Unfortunately, not that active, but they have it. And we go there relative regular and try to get some funding for our projects, and we are reasonably successful. So this was a research project with the ministry, and this is Jay Seema, our site engineer, Wolfgang Scheffler. He is the inventor of that dish, and he was just here and left yesterday, and he met Baba very much at the end together with me, because now we are planning for a very, very, very big 50 square meter dish. I will show you why we want to make such a big one. So we have also a lot of solar hot water. Solar hot water is very cheap. You can put it up in the centers or at your home. It's a cheap technology, reliable, and the cost comes back very fast. And you can see this is Pandavavan, Shantistam, and you can see on the rooftops everywhere there's solar hot water. So this is a technology which works very nicely, and everybody actually, in most of the countries, we can do it. Then we have in Shantivan, we have a shop called Solar Aditya Shop. And in this shop, we are selling articles with a subsidy from the ministry, solar lantern, cooking box, and solar home light kit. And also we give informations. Here you can see the solar cooking box. This is something also you can do at your home. If you have a reasonable good sunshine, you can actually buy such a cooking box and you can use it. We are using it time to time here, and David makes some solar bread and some cake sometimes, and they taste very, very nicely. And you can cook also rice, vegetables, and so on. And these solar cooking boxes are usually available locally. The only thing is you need sunshine. They are not working in the night. Here we have a solar lantern. You know, here the lantern, and here's a small battery inside, the solar plate, and we charge the lantern. In India, 600,000 villages have no electric connection. So you can imagine how valuable such a solar lantern is for school children or for somebody in the night in a little hut when they have no light, only candle or kerosene light, and they have such a solar lantern. We are selling that also in our shop. Then we also sell solar home light kit. This is a solar module, a battery, charge controller, and you can install it for a small house with a lamp and the light and all this. This is a 12-volt DC system. This is very simple and relatively cheap, maybe some $250. But all these things you buy locally. Don't come to me after this presentation and say, "Golo, Golo, we want to buy it and we want to carry it with us," because it will be very complicated. It's all big and heavy stuff. Yeah? So then we have done a lot of work with solar photovoltaic. These are the blue cells, and this is a different technology from the concentrator technology. This is a little bit costly. Here you can see backside of Gyan Sarovar. Here is Spark building. Here's our solar department, and here we have 50 kilowatt installation. Here you can see our battery bank inside the Gyan Sarovar, and the power for this projector and the power for my microphone is coming from solar energy. Also the power when the light goes off and some small bulbs go on. We have 300 emergency bulbs here. David Bai's art department is running on solar energy. Most of the computers are running, all the computers are running, the telephone exchange. Many, many, many loads, the sound system, everything is running on solar energy. All critical loads are on solar. So it's like an emergency backup system, but at the moment we produce maybe 5% of our requirement because it's so costly. If you come up with a couple of millions, we will easily make this place 100% on solar. Okay? So then we did a big project with the World Bank, and all over India, it got bigger and bigger and bigger, those projects, and unbelievable. Now we have whole India here, and we did 50 installations of 5 kilowatt systems. This is Delhi, this is Mount Abu, Lotus House, Ahmedabad, Dwarka, Calcutta, Madras, Udupi, Hyderabad, Bangalore, so many places. We put up a 5 kilowatt solar system with battery bank, and we did installation and maintenance. And after 8 years, these systems are still running, and this was a World Bank soft loan. So we work with the World Bank together. Sometimes when you come in India, you will find very elaborate electrical installations, and it gets difficult to identify the incoming and the outgoing cables. You have, of course, trial and error, but it's not so advisable, and even the trained engineer will face problems seeing this beauty. And sometimes if you're not careful, the whole thing smokes off. We had this 2 times now in the last 10 years, and since then we are very, 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 very careful with the local Indian grid, because the Indian grid is a very bad grid. We have 20-30% power failure, we have phase reversals, brownouts, power cut, frequency fluctuation, and all sorts of other bad things. So we have to be very careful with the Indian grid, and most likely in future it will become worse, because requirement is increasing and production is not going along with it. So power cuts will increase. This is our latest project, which we did last year in, 2006, 2 years ago. It's already 2 years ago now. We did in our Om Shanti Retreat Center near Delhi. This is a 200 kilowatt photovoltaic system. Therefore, I had to go 5 years to the ministry. And I said, oh, please, sir, kindly sanction our proposal. And after 5 years, he said, okay, I'm sanctioning the proposal. So we got some funds from the ministry. And we set up with their help the system, and here you can see the solar cooker and the whole complex. Most of the load is now on solar. But this was a costly project, $1.5 million, and we got 50% subsidy from the ministry. And we did all fabrication ourselves, planning, fabrication, erection, everything, layout, cabling, everything ourselves. Our Hansraj Bhai here from Gyan Sarovar, he was working day and night. It was so hot in the summer. We put, because in summer, in India it gets 45, 48, 49, 50, 51, and then we stop counting. So we put floodlight, and we worked in the night and slept in the day, because it was too hot. Yeah, future research project, very important. We plan, this is the big project, which is now in our mind. It is in planning stage and it is not final, but nevertheless, I will tell to you. This is why I was so lucky to meet Baba the last times, because we were asking Baba, give us blessings and tell us the future. Will it happen or not? But Baba is very cautious and careful, and Baba says, if you do good efforts, it will happen. So we always have to, Baba is smart, and we have to be powerful, Then things will happen, and we have to be determined. That was very fast. You can see here, we plan for a 1.5 megawatt solar thermal power plant. This is a research and demonstration with Thermax. Thermax is one of the biggest power plant builder in India. It's a very big company, and luckily, the vice president of the company is a Pakka BK. So we are in touch with them, and they want to enter solar, and we have expertise, and now we jointly together develop a solar power plant, and they will help us in the area where we have no expertise, and there's a lot of expertise required, because we are talking of a power plant. It's a big thing. It may be like 10 million euros cost, and Ramesh Bhai, our senior brother, who is dealing with the finances at Golo, there's no money from the Yagya. You have to get all this money from somewhere else. So it's a challenge. We just have to start thinking unlimited. Baba told us, you will get the whole world. The whole world is yours, isn't it? So we are running a center and we say, I have $100 is missing for the rent, and how I'm going to do that. And actually we own the whole world. So we have to enlarge in our consciousness. We are owning the whole world, and everything will come. Then it's no problem. Baba said at the end, houses will come, cars will come, Mercedes cars, of course, and jets and this and that. Everything will come to us, and we don't need it any longer. That's also not good. We should get the good stuff now. So our yoga power should be good. We get the good stuff. Don't laugh, I'm serious. So here is a joint R&D with Thermax, and we produce 35,000 kilowatt, and we have 16 hours of storage. local technology, no high tech, everything from India. We are very proud on that, and maximum local input. This is how the thing will look like. Here we have the solar field storage, and here's the turbine, and here we produce electricity. I don't go in details. And after 1 year of researching, calculating, traveling to Thailand, traveling to Spain, traveling to Germany, and this and that, and interviewing many, many people, we came back to our own dish, which we are using since 10 years. We found out actually it's the cheapest and the best one. But we didn't know it in the beginning. Now we know it. And now what we are doing is we are constructing a 50 square meter dish. This is 10 meters height. And I was just yesterday with Brother Neve, and I asked him, Neve, by where can I put up this beautiful 3-story high dish? So the place is still under negotiation, but well, hopefully we'll find some corner. And here's the receiver. We focus the sunlight in the receiver. The receiver is an iron block of 3 tons of steel. We heat up the steel to 450 degrees. When we need steam, we open a valve and pump water through and we get steam out. It's a very simple design. Everything locally, very, very good. We hope so, at least. Yeah. So here now you see a layout. This is our Shantivan complex. This is our Mukri Mata. You know that we are building a new big complex. Who doesn't know it? Oh, so many don't know. Okay, backside of Shantivan, when you come down the street from here's the road, and the road goes up to here's a big complex which is coming up. We're building accommodation for 5,000 people. Because Baba's Shantivan got too small, and we need more accommodation, so we got a big land here, and we are constructing for 5,000 people. So our idea is here to get some more land and put 1,340 dishes. It's a lucky number. After long calculations, we came to 1,340 dishes. And 240 megawatt, 15 tons of steam. And the steam we sent here. Here we are putting the turbine, 1.5 megawatt. And from here we send electricity to the generator house and distribute the electricity inside the complex. Extra electricity we give to the Indian grid. And therefore we can take free grid here. It's called grid banking. Then also we send steam to Mukri Mata, and we use the steam for hot water and cooling, and here we use the steam for hot water and cooling. This is the idea. We need 10 million euros, 2 years, 200 people will work day and night if we go on war footing, and then we will be independent. So let us see if we can do that magic. Your positive thoughts are also required and most welcome. This is the layout of the field. This is the schematic diagram. You can see we already have done some homework. Yeah, now the big question, we are coming now to the third part of the presentation. The first part was about global warming, how bad it is actually really. The second part is what you can do against it. And what is a possible solution? And the third part is, how is the whole thing, renewable and spirituality, actually how they are connected? Well, you all know we meditate and we try to become very small, like Bindu. Né? And up there is Supreme Bindu, Baba, Paramatma in soul world. And we try to connect ourselves through the means of yoga and draw power from Baba. The same, and it's always said, the more smaller you become, the more Bindu stage you have, the more clearer will be the connection. So in solar energy we do the same thing. We actually tap to the sun and we try to be highly efficient. So there are parallels. No? We always say Baba is the spiritual sun, and so we're using here the logic sun, and in yoga we use the alogic sun, Baba, Shiv Baba. And we connect ourselves and we try to minimize the losses. In solar energy, and as yogis we also try to minimize the losses. The losses are the bad thoughts and the attractions of Maya. Good, I know, you understand that. Good. So, now everybody talks about sustainable development. So what is sustainable development? All conferences, newspapers, everybody is talking about sustainable development. And degradation of inner values causes degradation of the outer environment. Now the signs, they all tell us, oh, this forest is gone and this ocean is dirty and this water is bad and here this air is bad and this and that. And they all look for technology. And they all say it's only because we're using not the right technology, but actually our value system has been completely spoiled and degraded. And our thoughts are impure, and that's why the matter only reflects those impure thoughts. So it means because of degradation of inner values, the outer environment is actually degraded. Because you see, whenever I use a technology, first I have to think. So if I'm yogi yukt, I'm pure in my mind, I decide a good technology, a clean technology. If I'm impure in my mind, I use an impure technology which spoils the environment. I'm even greedy and I hurt other people and I don't care. This is why the degradation of the outer environment is a reflection of the loss of inner values. So we need common understanding by sharing the same value system. You know, when they were in Bali, 2 weeks ago was this big environmental conference. All countries of the world were there. They were fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting. Because one side said, no, the solution is to the right side. We are 100% sure. Then the other side said, no, it's to the left side. Then the Chinese came and said, no, it's upstairs. Then the Indian delegation said, oh, you're all wrong, it is down. So, you know, there was no common value system where they could agree upon. That's why no solution can be found. That's why we need Baba, because Baba gives us back the original value system of the soul. Purity, peace, all those qualities. So the values and technology have to go hand in hand, and then we will have golden age. Then we will have a golden age technology, and Baba many times spoke on that technology. He says you will have some light by crystals, you will have some sort of atomic power, but not atomic power stations. It will be something very intelligent and very clean, and silence, and no smoke, no fire, no burning, but we will have everything, and efficiency will be high. So now whatever we lack, it will be there, because the values and the technology are combined. Here we have a very sophisticated technology, but we have no value system. Now I want to tell you a little bit about subtle vibrations, because many people think, okay, there is the technology and the values, but what can I do as a small person to change? Because this is a global phenomenon, and we have to act actually as a global family on those problems. India cannot solve it, America cannot solve it, with all its military power they cannot solve it. Russia, China, nobody can solve the problem, because environmental pollution does not stop at the borders. This is a global problem. For the first time, the world is facing a real global problem. So what can we do as individuals? How Baba yesterday spoke also that our thoughts, we should have the Shakti, we should do Mansa Seva, the service through our mind. But how is it working? Does it have any effect? Yes, it has a very, very strong effect. You know, there is a Japanese scientist, his name is Masaru Emoto, and he did a lot of work on the conscious water. Water is the medium which shows the input of our thoughts. Baba always says, create powerful, pure thoughts, and you can heal the world, you can create the new world. But how it actually works, we don't know. But this Masaru Emoto, he did a lot of research on the effect of thoughts on water, presentation of results of crystallization of water. So what he did is, he took water drops and he froze those water drops and he cut them in very small pieces and he put them under a microscope. And this is how it looks like. Beautiful, no? This is a water crystal. And you can see this is a water crystal from the Niagara Falls. This is a very, very, very pure water in the Niagara Falls, very fresh. Because in Canada there's very less people and a lot of water, so the water is very nice. If we take a drop of Nucky Lake water, somebody's laughing there, it may unfortunately be not so nice. Nobody's laughing there. Here's this Emoto, but see, many, many places in the world, the water is actually spoiled. Most of the tap water which we are getting, I show you some pictures of tap water. So what he did is, he found out if he actually calls that the water reacts on our thoughts. So what he was doing is, he took water, neutral water, and he put here heavy metal music to the water. So you can see no crystal. You see heavy metal music, all this kind of music, which the youngsters hear nowadays in these loud iPods, and they ruin their eardrums. This is the heavy metal. And here, the same water through meditation. You can see the difference. And this water is healing water. If you drink water which has such crystals inside, your body reacts positive. You become relaxed, peaceful. All diseases, they go away. This is water which you find also in the famous wells, in Lourdes, for example. Or if you go to Mount Abu, here is a Gaumuk where you can walk to Mount Abu. And there is a marble head of a cow. You have to go 500 steps down, backside of the mountain. And down is a small ashram, and there all over the year the water comes out. And whenever I go there, I take 2-3 liters of that water, because that is a holy water. This is a water which has this kind of crystallization. And the tap water has this kind of crystallization, because through the taps and through the pumps, that positive information is destroyed. And what he did is, he put music. Here you see the water after they play Mozart. You know, very nice crystal. So what this guy did is he took the water from Tokyo, put it inside the middle of the room, and he called 5 people from the street, and he said, okay, you 5 people, you have positive thoughts on the water. First he said, you have negative thoughts on the water. No. And then first positive thoughts, and the water became like this. He said, you think for 5 minutes, water, I love you. Water, you are my best friend. And water, you are my companion. Just think and look at the water, nothing else. And these people didn't know anything. He called them from the street. And the water became like this. Beautiful crystals. Then he made the opposite experiment, and he said, you must think negative on the water. He says, water, I hate you. Water, you are a very bad water. And anyhow, you are not tasty and full of chloroform. So the water took that literal, and you see how it looks like. Very, very bad water. So water reacts direct. And you know our planet? 80% by water, covered by water. Our body? 85% by water. Very powerful. So that's how our thoughts are reacting to matter. And in waters you can prove it. This is one of the very few areas, because water is very, very sensitive. And this Japanese scientist found out that method to make it visible. Here's water which has been treated with negative thoughts. So now you understand, watch out about your negative thoughts. They're very, very, very powerful. So what should we do? The first and foremost and important thing, think good about yourself. You know, Brahmins, they have many worries. First worry is, oh, will I become perfect until the end? Will I do it? Will I make it? I don't know. Second worry is, oh, my Amritvela, either I missed it or it was not so powerful. That was also not good. Or I have a clash with somebody, and or I meet somebody which I really don't like. You know, I mean, you know people which you don't like? Nobody responds. You seems to be a very advanced audience, which is good. I take this as positive, that you only have positive thoughts. So imagine how important it is that you think positive on yourself, because the thoughts directly influence your cellular structure and the water which is inside the body. All your organs, everything reacts. And doctors, they say they are psychosomatic diseases, and how they are spreading. And people become restless, and diseases are increasing because of the power of thoughts. Baba teaches us a lot of the power of thoughts, and he says, the powers are your keys to shape the future. But we Brahmins, we forget it, because we are worried. We are worried, oh, I put some tea drops on my white kurta pajama. This is bad. If others will see that, they may think I'm a bad fellow. So, you know, we have all sorts of worries. So, it's Sunday and Monday, we have to go to work, you know, such kind of worries. So first of all, we have to become free of all those worries. And every morning when we get up, the first thing we should do is, we should take all those worries and give them to Baba. And we should bless ourselves and we should say, I'm a happy person. Even if I'm an unhappy person by nature, I should tell myself I'm a happy person, I'm pure, I'm peaceful. And even if this person, which I don't like, comes after Amrit Vela and asks me a stupid question, I will be very peaceful to him, very happy, very joyful. And I will give blessings actually to him because my thoughts are very powerful. You have seen, oh, this is too fast. How that? You have seen how the negative thoughts are influencing ourselves. And they influence others because they found out these thoughts are travel at no speed. So we have to think about good, about ourselves. Every morning we should bless ourselves. The next effort we should do, think good about others. Baba told us in this Moli, he says, talking we are all doing. Conferences we are all doing. We are all printing so many papers, and nowadays we have so many core groups, working groups, computer groups, so many wings. We don't have a solar group, but we have many, many groups, and we produce a lot of papers and action plans and this and that, but we have to think parallel. We have to become very strong and very focused in our thinking process, because our thoughts are the key with whom we unlock the new world. Many will think how we are changing this world, it's so dirty, it's so big, as a small soul what can I do? But the soul influences on the subtle level the subatomic particles of this physical world around us. All the time we are sending information out and receiving information, and we are not aware. That's why Baba spoke about Brahma Baba in the Moli yesterday. He said Brahma Baba was alert. Even on the last day he was alert. He was conscious that all the time whatever he thinks has an effect on us, on myself, as well as on the others. And Baba says the service to our mind is the most important. You can give speeches, but if your consciousness is not accordingly, the effect will be 1% or 2%. But you don't have to do a speech, you just sit there and you radiate thoughts, powerful thoughts, you project the world in front of you and you send those qualities, and you will have a very, very powerful effect towards the souls, but also towards the matter. And even global warming can be controlled by our thoughts. Global warming is nothing as a reflection of the negative thinking of the majority of the people. Of course, I cannot say that too openly to the scientific audience, but I'm telling to you. So, lastly, think good about the world. You know, you saw all this information on global warming, they're actually a little bit depressive, no? Because basically the world is going down. Huh? The world is going down the drain, it's getting destroyed, it's getting ruined, and it's not really a fun to see all these climate changes and people are losing their livelihood and so on and so on. Baba has told us, but seeing it practically is a big challenge. So Baba has told us, think good about the world. Become a detached observer in the meditation and think good about the world. Imagine the world and send positive vibrations to it. Because we have seen at the crystals what our thoughts can do. But our thoughts are actually much, much, much more powerful than this little change of crystals. Once I had a car and it was only driving 150 and I thought it should drive 160. And I tell you, it was driving 160. Okay, this is a joke, but anyhow. So our thoughts are very, very powerful, and think good about the self, think good about others, and think good about the world. These are the three key things which we should imbibe, and we should understand our thoughts are extremely powerful and they are going to change the world. We are actually creating the new world through these thoughts, because we are influencing matter on its subtle level. And nobody else than us can do it, because science cannot reach it. But Baba is teaching us, and Baba says, the moment you become pure, you reach your final bindi stage, the point, the smallest undividable point, I the soul, then you can influence everything else. So what we have to do is, towards the better world, We have to project peace, happiness, purity and love. And we have actually to engulf the world in a web, in a cloud of these qualities. Because everywhere now, everywhere on this world, we have massive amount of conflicts, of wars, of killings. You may have heard in Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto got killed, the whole country is in a bad shape. In Kenya, there's election in Africa, there's slaughtering going on. People are in the church and pray, they close the door and burn the whole church. This is happening every day, everywhere. Simultaneously, last year was the worst year in terms of calamities. We had 950 calamities all over the world. Number of earthquakes is increasing, number of storms is increasing. So many problems. And all the souls on this planet, they're getting restless. And they don't know what's going on and they're scared. Because they don't know that they are immortal souls. They have identified themselves with their body and with the physical world. We know we are immortal souls and we are going to our golden age world. So we have to send all these people peace, happiness and purity through our power of thoughts. And how I'm doing it? I'm just thinking it. It's just a question, I'm just start thinking it. Just start thinking, I'm a happy person. You think that 10 times, you get a smile on your lips. After 20 times, your heart chakra opens and you become very happy. After 30 times, you start dancing. This is the effect of power of thoughts. You just have to do it. But the problem is we have sanskaras, old habits. After 5 times thinking, I'm happy, the first thought comes, am I really so happy? Then after 10 times the thought comes, actually tomorrow, I should do this and this and this. And usually we don't get along above 12, 13 times thinking, you know, then the concentration power goes down. So it's a question that we are alert. As Baba said on Brahma Baba, alert on the power of thoughts. So it's 12:33. And I think it's time to conclude this session. This is the last slide and now some information. If you want more information on solar activities of the Brahma Kumaris, you can type www.solar.bkwsu.de. There is a brochure as PDF which you can use and distribute if you want and can use it for service. And there's also my contact address, and if you have a very important question, you can send an email to me. If you want to set up solar system at your place, please contact the local companies. Don't contact me. I get so many requests every year. I could only travel around and look for Baba centers for small solar systems. But as it is, if you have some idea, some program or anything, you want some clarification, you can send me a mail. And that's the end, and I thank you very, very much for your time. You have any questions? We have maybe 5 minutes. I bombarded you with a lot of information, I know. Yes. Yes, yes, they are different. They are different. There are many various technologies. Hot water, solar concentrating, solar photovoltaic, you know. You just take a little booklet, introduction to solar energy, everything is inside. 5, 6, 7 main technologies are there. Flat plate collector, solar concentrator, solar photovoltaic, wind, biomass, you know. Alag alag. Pardon? Yes, it's possible. You can use... He was asking about air conditioners. A friend of us is doing a solar project in Chennai, in South India. You make steam and you send the steam into a machine which is called vapor absorption chilling. The steam is converted into cold. Don't ask me about details. It's a magic box. Steam goes in, cold comes out. It's working with quite good. And what we plan for Shantivan, once we get that system, that big system, we will send steam to Shantivan and also cool down the big hall in summer because it gets 45, 46, 47 and cooling is a big, big problem in India. It's a big problem at many places in the world. But the biggest saving which we can do is energy saving. This is where it starts. Means reduce our footprint. It's called the footprint. Make it smaller. Make it a green footprint. It means use less car. If we drive, drive with four people. Use trains instead of flight. Switch off your computer in the night. Install energy saving bulbs. Save your water. Don't spoil the water. So many areas where we as individuals can do something. And it's good, you know, if we start as small individuals and we try also here as an institution to improve our environmental footprint. It means to reduce our energy consumption. And the biggest potential where you can make the most is energy saving. That's the biggest way you can start. Second is to switch to solar energy. Because then you have to buy it new. Saving is easy. You just change a bulb and put another bulb in. Energy saving bulb, for example. So there are many, many areas where we as individuals can do something. But I hope you understand the first thing is we have to switch on the lamp here inside and become a powerful light and might house of positive thoughts. And any project you have, you just think positive on it and things will materialize. Okay? Okay, thank you.